Hey, y'all, welcome back to this week's episode of Her with Amina Brown. And if you follow me on social media, I hope you do, because you need to follow me, especially on Instagram, because I'm there more often than the rest of them, at Amina B-E-E, if you don't. If you do, you probably saw in my stories that I have been hinting to you all that I am going to be doing a bit of a series of episodes, even though they will not be in order. So they'll just pop up here sometimes. But I'm doing a series of episodes on friendship. And this is one of those episodes. So I'm so excited to welcome spoken word poet, podcaster, IT geek, and cyclist, and my friend, Salita Williams.
So glad to be here.
If you've been listening to the podcast, you probably recently heard my episode with my sister, Makita, which is the first time on this set of what the podcast is now that I've talked with a family member. And so Salita is my first guest. I've had other times where friends were on here, but never a time where it was a friend on to actually talk about our friendship. So if you enjoy episodes where you get a chance to get in my business, this is your time. So Salita and I talked about this because I wanted to do something that felt more like conversations on the podcast this time versus an interview. And we've had a very interesting journey in our friendship with each other. Yeah. And we've talked a lot about how there's a lot about friendship as a grown adult.
Yes.
And how you handle those transitions or not. And we thought maybe us sort of letting you all into some of that, not all of it, because some of that is for us.
Not all of it.
Yeah. So just so y'all know, some things are in the film world, they say some things are on the cutting floor, but some of that ain't your business. So some of that ain't going to be in here. But the parts that we can share publicly, I thought it would be interesting to share that. So I don't know. This feels like I feel vulnerable a little bit.
No, it's going to be, I mean, we're definitely going to, you know, maintain the integrity and privacy of our friendship. But I think we did both agree, like, that what we are going to choose to share today will be vulnerable. It will be juicy in some ways. It'll be like, what? You know, there's some good stuff in there. So I'm feeling it.
Okay.
But I'm excited.
Let's start with how we met. So I'll tell you I'm honestly trying to think, Salita, if I remember like the moment that we met, but I don't know that I can remember that
the
as
moment,
much as the time
yeah.
of life.
Yeah. I don't remember our actual very first encounter. And I also wasn't like your initial primary friend at Spelman.
That's true.
You know, you had a set of roommates that y'all were like peas in a pod first before you and I started kind of connecting.
That's true, actually. So we did go to college together. We went to Spelman College. Shout out to all the Spelmanites listening.
Spelmanites, 1998.
Okay. And our dorms were right next to each other.
Yeah.
And I think we originally met because we both got involved with Redacted Campus Ministry.
Ministry who shall not be named.
It will not be
named
on this here podcast. But for those of you that are familiar with how like college ministries worked, a lot of them worked on a chapter basis. So it was a ministry that was national at the time, but then had these like local chapters, sometimes at one school, sometimes, you know, a couple of schools will come together and have a chapter. And so we were a part of a chapter at Spelman. And we both were in the same year. You know, we got into this ministry our first year.
Yes.
We both came from church backgrounds.
Yes.
Very involved in church.
Very serious.
Backgrounds. So can you tell me when you were leaving, you were from Baltimore?
Right. From Baltimore.
When you were leaving Baltimore, were you being instructed like, hey, you need to get there to Atlanta. You need to find like a church home, some other Christians, be in community with, like, what were the vibes?
So it was, yes, go and, you know, I hope you find some people and get connected. But the main vibe was you coming back here. Like, this is your church home. Whoever you meet and get connected with down there is not the real thing. Like, you need to come back. We need you serving here. We expect that you're going to grow up here. Like, you're simply going there to go to school. So,
wow.
There was a lot about us meeting and the ministry and the church that was attached to all of that that really caught me off guard, because I had no intention of trying to, like, make a serious ministry life here in Atlanta.
Yo, it is kind of interesting to hear you say that now, because going to Spelman, we were all coming from environments where we were in leadership
right
there. Yes. You know, we were looked at as leaders where we came from. So Atlanta was fine for a lot of us. But a lot of us, it was that story of like, yeah, but, you know, I'm going back home to be amazing. Like, those people are expecting me.
Right. Yeah. I'm a youth leader, youth ministry leader there. Yes.
I have to go back. I don't know what y'all are doing. My story was, I left San Antonio. That was my hometown. So I left San Antonio with a list from my youth pastor.
Oh, that's dope.
Of churches that the pastors knew the pastors of my home church.
Yeah.
So I had a list of three. The church I ended up going to subsequently, where Salida and I both ended up going to, was not on the list, not because it was bad at the time, but it wasn't on the list because nobody knew about it. It wasn't, you know, these churches, you know, that my pastors were recommending to me were very, like, established Black churches in Atlanta at that time. These would have been big name Black preachers in the late 90s. They were encouraging me to go there.
Yeah.
And they were like, as soon as you get there, you need to get in some Christian community or you won't stay saved. Because everybody was like, you going to Atlanta from San Antonio, you're going to be turned out if you don't try
to, my goodness,
you know, stay holy and figure out this. So I don't even remember. Oh, okay. I won't name all their public names, but we have mutual friends that were Spelmanites that were older than us.
Yes.
And it was through a couple of them.
Yes.
And because they were so beautiful.
Right.
And their hair was so gorgeous. And we were on campus kind of struggling, trying to figure out what we were going to do with our hair. I mean, your salon choices in walking distance.
Limited.
Yeah, very limited. And you don't know who to trust or anything.
Right.
So meeting them, I think actually I complimented them on their hair and was like, where do you get your hair done? They were like, in Marietta. Those of you that live in Atlanta are like, what? Spelman's like in the middle of the city, you know?
Right.
So they were like, we get our hair done in Marietta. And they were like, we're a part of this ministry.
Right.
We have prayer. Was it every day? Or was it once a week we were having prayer?
Was morning prayer every morning?
That sounds like...
Wow, how come we don't remember?
I'm like, what was that about?
Was it every morning?
Man.
I feel like it was every morning at
7 a.m.
7 a.m. on the steps of Sister's Chapel.
How did you meet those people to know to go to morning prayer? Because my mind feels like that's the first time I ever saw you.
Okay. This is my first interaction with that particular ministry. Was I saw signs around campus that they were doing a showing of No More Sheets by Juanita Bynum. Oh my goodness. The prophetess. Yes. And growing up in Baltimore, like, we had like a ladies' night at the house where we watched No More Sheets, and No More Sheets was everything. Everybody was talking about No More Sheets. Like, oh my gosh, she was amazing. Da, 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 da. No More Sheets. That's how it was supposed to be. So I was all about it. I was super religious. And so when I saw the signs for that, I was like, oh, this has to be legit. Like, I definitely need to partner with these people that are doing this movie showing or whatever. And what's so crazy is, I had met this little Morehouse man my very first week at school when it was just, you know, the freshman Spelman and the freshman Morehouse dudes there, and made him my little boyfriend. And just before No More Sheets, I was hanging out with him, doing all kinds of foolishness. Then I went to the No More Sheets night, and that's when I met all of our other friends. Were you there?
Yes.
Were you there?
So that must be where we met.
It had to be, but I don't remember interacting with you.
No.
I definitely remember interacting with the older, like, you know, big sistery eventually type Spelmanites that were there, that were in the ministry, that we wound up looking up to. Like, and I remember one of them told, like, her whole story about how she was with the boy and how she decided, I'm not going to do this anymore. And I felt all convicted. And so, like, at 2 a.m. in the morning after that event was over, I went back to that little boy from Morehouse broke up with him.
What?
I kissed dating goodbye. And was completely committed to this ministry from here on out. I never dated again. I never dated until like years after graduating from college.
Yo. Okay, so let me give context to those of you that are like, what is No More Sheets?
Oh my gosh, please.
There was a preacher. She's still a preacher today. But this was like her heyday in especially Black church
definitely
cultural circles. Dr. Juanita Bynum, probably Reverend Doctor. Reverend Doctor,
prophetess,
other sundry titles.
Prophetess,
yes, prophetess,
Reverend,
evangelist, other titles went over there. She was like a big preacher if you've grown up in Black church.
Deal.
So I knew her name, too, from having grown up in Black church. I think she had come to our church before or part of like conferences we did at our church or something. So I knew her name from that. But I had never seen No More Sheets. And No More Sheets, for people that grew up in Black church, No More Sheets had the same cultural push for us in Black church that other people would say I Kissed Dating Goodbye had in like white churches. I Kissed Dating Goodbye went even beyond white churches because my mama definitely sent me a copy of it twice. But No More Sheets was giving you this message like if you're a woman who's had a sexual past.
Yeah.
This was a big part of how the term soul ties got introduced in Black church. And Juanita Bynum in this video, it's like you're watching a video of a sermon, but in a way, the way she preaches the sermon appears to me almost like a one woman show because she has the sheets that she's using as props. It's very dramatic.
Yeah.
And she's telling her own story of her own sort of sexual past and all these things that she experienced that she needed God to help her, what we would have said in Black church term, to be like delivered from.
Yeah.
And that every time you have sex with these men, that your soul tying.
Yes.
Is like inexplicably being tied to them until you learn the saving grace of Jesus, right? So imagine that it's a group of us all between 18 and 22 watching, but the larger number of us are first year students there. And this is our first, some of our first encounter with this message, some of our first encounter with this idea that we should have been waiting until we got married to have sex, or that if we'd already had sex, there was this way that, you know, I mean, I'm lots of air quotes here that y'all can't see, but, you know, there was this way that something could happen that would sort of wipe the slate clean for you, you know. So imagine you're hearing that message at 18 or 19 years old, especially if you've already grown up in a church environment and you're knowing these girls that are older than us, that are sophomores, juniors, seniors, that have invited us to this screening.
you know,
like I'm thinking to myself, this is the Christian community they told me to find. You know, these girls are like,
this is right in line right here.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that night is when they tell us, like, here are the other activities we do. Like, we have morning prayer in the morning on the steps of Sisters Chapel, which was our big chapel at Spelman. And they were like, we do, like, movie nights and game nights. And, you know, we just, you know, kind of do life together vibes.
Yeah.
So that's what led me to morning prayer.
And they also, they were, like, trying to push it and trying to not push the church that they were connected to. Because this ministry was a parachurch ministry attached to a church that was in the area in Atlanta. And so eventually you would get out of them, oh, and a lot of us go to this Wednesday night service at this church if you want to carpool and go with us. And so the story unravels.
So it's important for you to have these dynamics of what there's, I mean, Salita and I are here, but there's a larger group, there's probably 8 to 10 women really that were in both of our lives, in our orbit in some way, because we all met, connected to this ministry that did, to your point, eventually lead to us going to this church. So I really wish that I could remember like this initial moment that I got to have some conversation with you. But at some point, we learned that we both were in choir in church growing up.
Yes. Oh,
and that was like a huge commonality. Because we both grew up in sort of traditional Black church, singing those choir songs from the 90s. I think Pages of Life was coming out the first year that we were in college. Am I right about that? Like 98, 99?
Pages of Life came out I was still in high school because that had Jesus Is All on it,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
But it laid good groundwork for our communication because we both knew and we both followed Fred Hammond with all his subsequent like albums that came out while we were in school, like Purpose by Design.
Okay. I even went back because I didn't know anything really about Fred Hammond until Pages of Life. Mm-hmm. So I went back and bought the albums.
The Inner Court. Yeah.
Like I went back and bought those albums because before Fred Hammond, I was very like Hezekiah Walker, yes. John P. Key. That was sort of like
that was it. That was
my gateway. And then you're singing in the youth choir. So that kind of kept you up on Kirk Franklin and Ty Tribbett at the time, Donald Lawrence. So like I remember that being a very big part of like the language of our early friendship.
Yes. Absolutely.
I also remember there would be times that you would get sick after we all got involved in the organization together in the ministry.
Yes.
And I mean, this part of it, you know, it's kind of like those of you that have been in nonprofit spaces or in church spaces. It's like, you know, as you hear us telling this story, there are aspects of it later that you're like, oh no, that wasn't a good thing at all. But the way that we were able to be community to each other, like I remember like the word getting passed around and we didn't even have cell phones then.
Nope.
I just remember some of the other girls that were sort of what would have been considered big sisters to us, letting us know that first year that you would have these times that you would get sick and we would like go to your room and like if we needed to bring food to you from the cafeteria or like that part of something that we were learning, I think was a really beautiful thing. I think that was a part of that might have been how I figured out you knew choir music because I was in your dorm room trying to, you know, we were taking rotations when you would get sick like that.
Pretty bad asthmatic, basically, is what the core of that was. And I'll say that, you know, as a ministry, like we ran hard. So you're talking about classes all day, studying, and then being fully committed to this ministry experience and staying up super late, making flyers or planning an event or something like that. My body was like, mm-mm.
And being in the dorm the first time, being around all those new people. I mean, I feel like a lot of us were getting sick and your immune system even more so.
Yeah.
Because your body was like, I'm sorry, this is not the thing for me.
No.
So I feel like we just had a really good connection that I always loved during that time.
I don't know when we started like really like spending a lot of time communicating and talking, but I knew that we had a deep and genuine connection. I just remember challenges financially freshman year.
Yo.
And, you know, sometimes not being able to like go to the cafeteria and get food yet, you know, and being able to like make you a sandwich from the caf and bring it and not having the words, but being able to just sit with you, you know, while, you know, we had no idea when, you know, the financial aid was going to drop and, you know, how that next semester was going to look.
Mm-hmm.
Like early, early moments of, you know, us showing up for each other. You definitely being a nurturer, you've definitely showed up in a nurturing kind of way in my life from the very beginning, and me just trying to be present, you know.
I think also the ministry that we were in was very leadership focused. I'm using the air quotes here. And in the sense of they were wanting to build Black Christian leaders out of us, right?
Yeah.
And so the more we got involved in the ministry, then of course every year some of the leadership were graduating. So then it meant like, oh, well, you know, we just had these seniors that have been holding this down all this time. Well, they've graduated.
Right.
Well, now we're sophomores. So I feel like as we took on more responsibility in the ministry, then I also learned that we worked together really well.
Yes.
And our way that we could like come together, like us, this is still true of you and I, that we could come together in a room and like figure out how to get something done.
Get
and
it
it'll
done.
Get finished and it'll be dope and it'll be creative and it'll feel good, be organized, boom.
Yeah.
We could get in a room and our two brains could get together and figure that out. And so I think after our first year, then by the time we got into sophomore year, I learned that you and I could do that. So by the time we got to our junior year, we were...
Yeah, we were peas in a pod. But,
yeah.
And also, and I think we knew that the ministry was like grooming you to be president. And junior year, you could only be president in your junior year.
Oh, that's right.
Remember that? Because your senior year, you were to mentor the new president while they served in their junior year. So sophomore year was like prime year for us and you having to like decide whether you were going to take on this mantle of being president of the ministry. And then ultimately I became vice president and supported you. But Amina, I recently, I don't know how, why I still had these papers, but I found like printouts of some of our AOL chat conversations. Because we would go home in the summer and we would, our whole thing the whole summer was we have to plan the next year.
Yo.
Like that's, we carried that weight on our shoulders. Like it was the only thing that we needed to be doing. And we would spend hours on these AOL chat messages planning like the Bible studies, what lessons, what topics, the outings, like what events were we going to do? How are we going to recruit? How are we going to get on campus early and get to these freshmen? Like it was a whole thing.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that. I forgot that we were on AOL like that.
Oh my goodness. And I still have my very first like Yahoo inbox. And sometimes I go back and I see like messages that we've sent each other.
I'm like, let me go back and figure out.
What were you using back then?
I think I had a Yahoo too. I obviously had the AOL because I had started using AOL IM before we left for college.
Okay.
I had like gotten one of the CDs.
Yes.
Y'all.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
CDs.
I'm sorry for y'all that didn't grow up like this. But you would get that CD-ROM in the mail for free.
For free.
And AOL would be like, you get 100 hours of internet. And I would be like, yes. I would go on there and like chat folks and find out what was going on at Spelman and Morehouse before we went to school.
Yes.
So I had AOL and then I think Yahoo became what is Gmail now to everybody.
Right.
So I think a lot of us at that time like switched over to having Yahoo emails. But girl, now that you're talking about it, I'm like, it's probably an archive of a bunch of stuff in that Yahoo email that I would be cringing and entertained to read. So I need to go back and do that.
Yeah.
Of course, as I'm talking to you about it now, Salida, and thinking like how involved our lives were in the ministry, there are parts of that that as I got older, I wished that I had spent time doing other things, like being involved in other organizations around campus. Like whenever we go back for homecoming now, or, you know, especially early on when I first like started going back after we graduated, I would be looking around like, it appears that everyone else was kicking it together at other things. And we weren't at that because I think the nature of the Christian organization we were in was very like, you're at school to evangelize these people.
Win 10% of your campus for Christ. Win a tithe of your campus.
Come on, a tithe.
Yes.
Like, in a way, to me, it's like, I look back on that time of life and I'm like, I mean, we had fun together because we all like were friends. We enjoyed each other. But there was a lot of college life that we just didn't do because everything was about that.
Like, everything
who
was
can
centric.
You get to come to morning prayer? Who's in your class that you see struggling or they're going through something? How can you, you know, be talking to them about Jesus, be talking to them about prayer or whatever? Like, I remember like seeing girls around campus and like knowing they were going to the club and kind of like praying for them while I was walking around campus and being like, I'm going to get them to come to our screening of Love and Basketball. Let me tell you, what's not a good movie to screen for your conservative Christian ministry is Love and Basketball, because as soon as that Maxwell song comes on with the sex scene, you don't want it. You don't want it. Why do we do that? So I think that was a very all-consuming, I guess what I'm trying to say. It was very all-consuming, I felt, for our lives, but it's what built our friendships, right? So like among us, I think there were only three people that had a car, right?
Yeah. Well, as a freshman, you couldn't have one. So we were, when we first came, we were very dependent on the older, only three of them.
I feel like our whole time in college among our circle of friends, there was a max of three cars at all times.
The person that had one of the cars graduated, so we lost a car. And then
somebody would come back and be like,
with a car, yeah.
I got a car now. So we did everything together when we were like having to go make copies of the flyers at Kinko's, y'all.
At Kinko's, 24 hours, middle of the night, going to make copies of flyers and stuff. Oh my gosh.
I mean,
what were we doing?
If somebody was going to Walmart, then it was like five people are packed in a car.
Yeah.
One person had to go to Walmart. but five of us have packed
we
in
all
a car.
Going. Yeah.
So I do feel like, I feel like you and I working together in the ministry, especially that junior year, to me, really like solidified our friendship because we had to spend so much time together working on that because we worked together so well.
Yeah.
Like if either of us had decided to like start a business, if I started a business where I would have needed your expertise, like I would have hired you right away.
Right.
Like we could have killed a business together, me
so
and
well
you,
together.
You know?
Yeah.
And then by the time we got to our senior year, I was actually just telling my sister Jamie about this. I remembered our senior year that our mutual friend Maya, because we ended up being sort of like a little tripod, a little trio.
Yeah.
Okay. little tripod, triad, whatever other tri words go there. So Maya and I were roommates, but you had a single
right next door.
That was our senior year in the air conditioning, Lord.
Yes, the air conditioned dorm.
And we like left our doors open for each other. It was basically like, other than the fact that we both went to sleep in our own beds at night, it was basically like we felt like we all had kind of like an apartment together.
We were all together. I think that is important to note because even though you and I spent a lot of time together, we worked very well together, we did a lot of planning and execution together, I don't think we were each other's primary friend in those years.
That's true.
And this, you know, leads into like how we transitioned after college. But I just remember like from freshman on to all of us becoming seniors ourselves, my closest friend was always older than me and always graduating. So every year I lost my closest friend, which in turn kind of pushed me closer to you guys because you guys were actually moving with me
right.
up through the years. And so by the time senior year came, all the other older people had graduated, had moved out of state already. And, you know, I was resting in my friendship with you and Maya. And for the listeners that don't know, my first name is Monica. So sometimes people would call us the three M's and it was Maya, me, and Monica just hanging out together, writing poems. We didn't even talk about that. Like,
oh man, that's
ministry
right.
That was started.
Yep. Like when y'all hear me on the podcast talking you through my initial entry into poetry community in Atlanta, like it was Salida and Maya that were going to that first open mic with me.
Yes,
and we went to open mics over the years, really. Like a lot of those open mics where we both were learning how to write and how to perform. Like these were the three friends that were brave enough to go to those open mics with me where we discovered we weren't as great as we thought. And then we got better
because
you know, we were there. So that was another part of what we got to do, which was one thing that we did sort of outside of the purview of the ministry world, even though we totally thought we was going to those open mics to get those people saved.
Yeah,
but
we thought we were evangelizing, witnessing to the people.
But I'm glad we went to that outside of our ministry world because that totally informed the work that all three of us are doing now.
Yeah.
Okay,
absolutely.
So we get to our senior year, the three of us living there, which gets us even closer to where like now we're sort of like we're three peas in a pod.
Yes.
Okay,
sure.
So then we graduate. This is 2002.
Yes.
I want y'all to know that Salida, it's not that I was about to say she got a real degree, but any degree from Spelman is a real degree. But I'm just saying, Salida got the type of degree where, like, she could just get out of school and get a real job. And Maya was a music major.
Right. I was computer science. Maya was music and economics.
Oh, that's right. And economics. That's right. And I was English.
You were English eventually. But you started out trying to do a double thing because you didn't want to rest on being an English major.
Yeah, I started out psych. Because I thought I was going to go to seminary and be a pastor. And then I was like, that doesn't seem like the thing. So then I was like, okay, I'm going to do English with a minor in creative writing. But I had intention to be a writer.
Yeah.
But Salida was one of the only ones of us that graduated. Salida and we had one other friend. We had a couple of friends that majored in education.
Yes.
So it's basically Salida and them that had like jobs.
Actually, I mean, so we graduated in May 2002, but just prior to that, in September 2001, was 9/11.
Was 9/11, that's right.
And I had done internships, IT internships, all throughout the years. Shout out to En-ROADS, if anybody knows about En-ROADS and, you know,
En-ROADS.
Getting black, young black or leaders in corporate and community leadership, but I had an IT job all throughout school every summer and through my senior year. While I was at school, I was working. 9/11 happened. Every company went on a hiring freeze.
Yeah, that's right.
So I could not land. We were all having difficulty making that next step. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to work in IT, and you and Maya were really trying to continue your education, and all three of us were like
floundering. lots of flounders.
My first job was Smoothie King.
Okay, and also mine. Salida's the reason why I got hired over there, because I applied to grad school, three of those, and didn't get in. And so Salida was like, look, man, I got this job over here. I think they need some people.
Right.
It won't be like 40 hours a week, but it'd be some money.
$9 an hour. Let's do it.
And the church we were going to, first of all, I should follow up and tell y'all, Redacted Ministry that we were a part of, the campus ministry part, actually ended after our junior year. So
that's right.
Our senior year was really the first time that any of us had a life that was free of having to do ministry on campus.
Yeah.
But we all had joined the church where the pastor at the church that we went to at the time, he was the leader of that redacted ministry before, like, it no longer existed. So we all went from being a campus ministry together to being like, oh, well, you know, the campus ministry part's over, but we can still go to church together. And we really took the free time that we had from no longer doing campus ministry and just converted that over to church.
To church.
And just got...
Yes, and all the things that they wanted us to do there.
Very busy.
Yes.
It was a very busy time.
Yeah.
So because of the way our church was structured, there was sort of this unspoken expectation that if you were a married couple in the church, that you should buy a house that had way more rooms than you and your spouse
needed,
or your kids to need it, so that other people from the church could live with you.
Yes.
And we reaped the benefits of this possibly unhealthy thing that was pressured onto couples in our church at the time. But we reaped the benefits of it because all of us were living with married couples.
Yes.
In their starter houses, in their basements, in their guest rooms or whatever, while we were trying to, you know, get our lives together and get on our feet. So that's why we were able to work at a place like Smoothie King, where we weren't going to get as many hours as we would have needed if we all would have been in apartments. You know, at that point, we couldn't really afford that. But these couples were allowing us to live with them for no cost or very little cost, you know. So when you were like, yo, I'm over here working at Smoothie King, so I went over there and worked with you. I was mad as hell, but I went over there and slapped them bananas into them rich kids' smoothies after school.
Oh my gosh, we were in the richest part of the city working at Smoothie King. So yeah, there was a lot of dynamics happening
so
there.
How long was it after we graduated before like you got hired on someplace as like a full-time thing?
I think I was only at Smoothie King for like 4 months or something like that. Didn't last long. And somebody from the church was a controller or the accounts payable, whatever, at Atlanta Medical Center.
That's right.
And got me hired there. I started out as their front desk administrative person. And as we discussed, we're both very good natural leaders. So very quickly, I was promoted to being the accounts payable supervisor.
Wow.
Of three other seasoned adult women that had been there for years.
What?
Yeah. But that was like my first corporate, post-college corporate job, accounts payable supervisor. I worked there for 2 years, and I got Maya a job there.
Wow!
Yes.
You better get people jobs, Salida, first of all. We all be owing you money a little bit right now.
It took a while before I landed my actual first IT job post-college. I was working for that church.
Wow.
And that came years.
Years later.
Years after. Because I did the accounts payable thing. But, you know, you and I were like, we want to be artists. We want to be artists full time. I had gotten this degree, but I didn't. there was a part of me that all this other artistic stuff had been unearthed during our time at Spelman.
Yeah.
So I realized that I was a pretty decent spoken word artist. I realized I was a pretty decent dancer. I realized I was an amazing step team member. Like all of this artistic stuff, I was traveling the country doing this stuff. So I'm thinking, I want to be a professional dancer, you know? So
wow.
I transitioned from there to working at a gymnastics academy.
Wow.
Because I was at this accounts payable place and I was getting tired of it. So I was calling a gymnastic place to see if they could teach me as an adult how to do backflips so I can incorporate that into my hip hop dance. So I called them asking, could I pay them to teach me how to do a backflip? And they said instead, well, we don't have formal classes for adults, but if you work here, we can teach you whatever you want. So they offered me a job on the phone while I'm trying to call them to see if could I pay them. They were like, we'll pay you to work here and then we'll teach you how to do a backflip.
Stop.
Because they were excited about the corporate experience and like, well, let's bring you in to do our administrative work. Then I became their webmaster. Then I became a gymnastics coach and a hip hop dance coach.
Wow.
For that gym. And that was like my first 4 years out of college was that.
Wow.
Really trying, because I had started hip hop dancing for a local artist, like doing background dance for her, been in a couple of music videos, and I was like trying to like do that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Get this computer science degree that cost umpteenth amount of money. But then eventually an IT position opened up at that church because I was still in this mindset of full-time ministry, you know, committed to this church, committed to ministry, you know, committed to this people that we got connected to after transitioning to Atlanta.
Yeah.
But I think that's where things start changing.
Wow. Oh, like it was kind of like, as you were saying that, I was like, that's right. That's right. That's right. Now I remember those things. Yeah. Like
it literally just came back to me too. Like, wow, that's exactly what happened. So what was going on with you? Right. Well, the first 4 years after college, what did that look like for you?
Okay. So I worked at Smoothie King with you.
Yeah.
And then you were like, got a better job. So when you left, I think I stayed there for a couple more months. And then someone who went to our church knew a woman that did event production and needed an assistant. And so I was so excited to go to do this interview with her. And it was actually right up the street from the Smoothie King where we worked. That's where she lived at the time. And so it was so random, but I was like, I'm going to go to this. I don't even know what an event producer does, but it sounds good. I'm going to go meet with her.
Yeah.
And she was paying so well that I worked for her part time, but it was almost like I doubled what I was making working for Smoothie King then. So I started working for her the fall after we graduated college.
Yeah.
And she had all these like amazing contracts. We did events with like Jane Fonda and Chris Tucker and Indiari. Next, still to this day, next to what I'm doing now for a living in my own business, that was my favorite, second favorite job.
Right there
out of college. Like I had so much fun working for her. And I'm 22. There's a lot about like how to interact with people in this sort of professional but lighthearted way that you have to do when you do event work that I just didn't know. And she totally taught me everything about how to like interact with artists and their management and rich people. Like she sent me to some rich people's houses that I just had to walk around there and act like I've been in these marble floors.
Right.
But I'd never seen these marble floors in my whole life. So I worked for her almost a year. And then all her like contracts and stuff dried up. So I think after that, I feel like after that, maybe I went through like a little ego time where I was like, I have an English degree from Spelman College. Like there is no need for me to have to make myself suffer with these penny ante jobs. I should have a job that's in my field.
Right.
And a woman that went to church with us, who worked in radio, she was like a mentor to me.
Yes.
And so everybody in church was like, you ought to ask her, you know, you would probably be good in radio. You ought to ask her, you know, for some advice. And I went to her and told her, you know, I shouldn't have to suffer these penny ante jobs with all this talent. And she was like, you absolutely will suffer these penny ante jobs if you want to see your dreams come true.
Yes, good start.
Get your life together.
Right.
She was like, you better apply for every job that's out here and take whatever you get, you know?
Yeah.
So when I took her advice, I ended up getting on with a temp agency. And so I worked temp jobs for a while. And like you, I was I guess I should back up for a second and also tell y'all that Redacted Ministry that we were a part of also did work with a very large white Christian college organization.
Yeah.
And so our ministry had a STEP team,
mm-hmm.
and we were the ministry that introduced to them spoken word.
Yes.
And STEP.
Yeah.
So the STEP team was traveling with them. And then because our church also was doing a college spoken word thing,
mm-hmm.
we were also traveling with them as poets and doing events with them
all the time.
So because we had had that exposure, then other places were also inviting us to do different things. And so I was taking those invitations because I could while I was like working for 2 weeks while the receptionist was on vacation over here. But then I might have a month where I didn't have any temp jobs. And so I would just travel the road, whatever. And then I got a temp job at this commercial realty place in Noonan, which is south of Atlanta. And I worked there. And then they were like, can we hire you on permanently? So that was the best job to have to me as like, I was also trying to do music journalism at that time, I think. So I think actually I was just getting that temp job right as things were about to start crumbling in a few ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was my first 4 years after school. It was basically a lot of sort of temporary jobs and stuff. And I think right around 24, 25, that started to tip over. I do remember when we had all graduated, and I think the summer after we graduated, we all did summer camp at our church together. So
yes.
even though we just graduated, we still sort of like all of us dumped ourselves
right
into
in.
That and did that.
Yeah.
But once the fall came, I remember like driving around Atlanta, you know, by myself, going to work, you know, picking up lunch or whatever. And just I remember really missing y'all and feeling so like disoriented.
Yeah. I was just thinking the listeners are probably like, wait a minute, how come? Why are you asking each other what were you doing right after college? How come you didn't know? Were you not hanging out with each other? And it was very different and hard, you know. We each landed in one of those houses. We were each like living with some couple in some completely different part of Atlanta.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything's like 20, 30 minutes apart by car on highway. So it wasn't like we weren't seeing each other every day like we used to. There was this whole thing that you and I were like talking about like, how do you maintain friendships post-college?
Yeah.
You know, because people are different. I was not a phone person, so I wasn't going to be talking to y'all on the phone every day. It just, you know, it's not how I communicate. I needed to be in person and in proximity with you. And we just did not have that. You know, it was hard. And in some ways, it became easier for me to connect with one of our other friends than it did for me to maintain my connection with you.
Right.
And I think part of that led into why when I did actually see you, it was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that probably really feeding into when we did connect, because it was always around ministry stuff. It was always around work.
Yeah.
It was always around execution and planning and putting on the next show or writing a new poem or memorizing it or, you know, staking out a show. And our friendship did not have an opportunity to breathe, to build, to grow apart from all of that.
Yeah.
It was only attached to the work.
Yeah. I never thought about it like that as you say it now, but that was true. We had a very busy life, you know?
Yeah.
We never really stopped being busy because our college life was very busy with ministry stuff. And then we got out of college and kind of jumped into church stuff. And so in a way that I feel like in a way there are certain parts of having been in church, like volunteering together, that sort of kept some of what you get when you're in college, that you're there sort of in the dorm. There's nothing like how those friendships get built because the boundaries are nowhere.
There's
you
no
know?
Boundaries.
Like, it's not like at 5 o'clock, you're going to leave and be like, oh, well, never see you. It's like you live together. You work together. You go to class together. You work in a homework. You eating food, whatever. So many of our activities, you're running errands together. I mean, we didn't really have a lot of time that we did anything alone, you know? And so there were certain parts of coming out of that into like volunteering in the church and just giving that all of our time that sort of kept you feeling like you were really close to each other.
Right.
Because you were together all the time. but there were a lot of other things happening in your life and inside of you as a person. It's also a very developmental time, I felt like, and we weren't getting as much opportunity to talk about that and what was happening there and what did all that mean. So I feel like one of the things we did that for me is what brought me to us breaking up as friends.
Mm-hmm.
We started instituting a Friday night where me, you, and Maya would always hang out every Friday. We started doing that when we were like 23, 24, around that, probably around 24 that time, because with all the church stuff that we had going, mostly there was nothing to do on Friday nights. And so we would all just hang out and whatever we decided to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But after we had done that for like a year, by the time we were getting close to turning 25, I was, first of all, having, by this time, we're 24, 25 years old. So we've known each other now 6 years of life.
Yes.
Almost 7 years.
Yes.
So for me, because we were going to a school that was historically Black and all women, it was like I spent all my time with women. And I think that for me partly was a realization, like, I don't think I want to spend my Fridays with y'all. Like, I think I wish I had a boyfriend.
Yes.
But I don't know how to say that in the church that we're going to, that's encouraging us not to date until we somehow meet someone we're going to marry. And I haven't figured out how I meet them
right
to know I'm going to marry them if we don't date.
Yeah.
And I done looked at all these dudes sitting here in the church and don't none of this seem like it's lining up for me. It did for some of our friends. It lined up for some of them.
For some of them, yeah.
That they looked in the church and saw their husbands or otherwise met somebody that was like, I just need to marry you.
Or were pursued by someone because that was part of the message of sitting back and waiting and you do not go after him. He comes after you. And you just need to make sure your stuff is together, like present well and be ready. But just sit and be ready. Don't you have no initiation responsibilities in this at all.
No.
And that, you know, it worked out for some people. And the thing is, you would see it work out for someone else and think, okay, this is possible. I think this might be possible. Yeah, let me do that. No.
No. And really, of our largest friend group I can think of, as far as what would have been the women that were seniors when we came in as freshmen to college, up to when we were seniors and the young women that were freshmen when we were leaving college. Like, if I were to look at that large age group, it's probably 15% of those people that either met their spouse in college or happened to meet their spouse at the church.
Yeah.
The large percentage of us, that was not the story.
That was not the story, no.
That happened. So I think for me, it was like for a time, I enjoyed that reconnection that the three of us had. And I enjoyed that we had a standing time to do it.
Yeah, to hang out.
But then over time, there were nights that I started to be like, oh, this, because this was the other thing. A lot of those hangouts would turn into like, well, whoever's house we're going to go hang out at, we should just spend the night there.
We just stay. Yeah.
And I also discovered I don't really want to spend the night.
And I don't want to spend a night at your place. And I don't want you spending the night at my place.
I don't. Because in my mind, I'm kind of like, you know, if I'm like 30, 40 minutes from where I live, I would like to drive there and get in my bed
right
by myself. And if you live 30 or 45 minutes from here, I would like you to go home and do that. But we can hang out till like 2 or 3 in the morning. But when it gets to be 2 or 3, when I say goodnight, I mean, like, go to your house.
And, you know, I think it was something about trying to maintain, or that was all we knew, was that rhythm of being in each other's space all the time and not having boundaries for where we lived and not having boundaries on our time and inviting other people into our orbit.
Yeah.
You know, like, we understood our orbit to be what it was. And I think, well, I'll just say I am a consummate introvert. I'm not like the most social person, huge social anxiety. So, you know, and we'll talk about how I've grown since then. But what I knew was, okay, I have these friends here. We did it. I'm good. I don't need to go out and open myself up to more people and make new friends why would I do that to myself? I don't want to do that. That's emotional toil. I want to rest here with you. And you're like, but I'm meeting other people. I'm getting to know people that don't know anything about you or this ministry or this work. You know, I'm interested in other things. And therein, you know, became some of the tension where it's like, but I'm used to us.
Right.
And the idea of us could not hold up anymore. It didn't hold water. You know, life was outweighing like how we had formatted our friendship to be executed. Like yeah. it wasn't realistic anymore.
Yeah. When I got to the point that I was like, I don't know that I want to keep doing this every Friday.
Yeah.
I also remember a couple of Valentine's days that our larger group of friends would get together and like eat out at a restaurant.
Mm.
And I remember looking at everybody else around us being booed up. And I remember then being like, I want a man. I'm sick of this. Like, I love y'all, but I want a man. And I think I started to wonder, because we were in a church that really wasn't helping us navigate the dating life of our 20s. They weren't helping us navigate a lot of things, but in particular in this conversation, they weren't helping us navigate that part. And I wondered, like, are we kicking it together like this because we really wish we did have some other connections that we don't have? And we're sort of substituting that with each other. So I will say, y'all, as we are having very honest moment on this episode, that I instituted the friend breakup with both Salida and Maya. I went to them separately and I basically told them, like, I think at first, before I got to like, this friendship has to break up, I said out loud to one or both of you that I didn't want to keep doing the spend the night thing and that I liked us hanging out on Fridays, but I didn't want to hang out every Friday. And when I said that, like, y'all were like, okay. But then I remember some Fridays happened after that. And it was almost like I got what I was asking for. And I realized when I got around some of our other friends that y'all had gotten together with them and y'all did a whole thing on the Friday. And you didn't invite me or didn't tell me about it. And it made sense why you didn't invite me or tell me about it, because I literally just said out loud that I don't know if this is a thing I want to do all the time. But then the Fridays that I did get invited to became less and less and less. And there were other friends that got included in that, and that became its own thing. So then I sort of went through this process there of like, I asked for this. And I got it. But like, why do I feel like crying because I'm not with them on Fridays? And I think for me, that started what became a healthy thing in the long run. That then I had to be like, I don't even know what I like to do on Fridays, because it was always about what we all tried to decide we all might like. So I did go on kind of like an exploration of like learning how to go places by myself, you know, and figuring out things that I might like, trying out social functions and whatever. So I think I was sort of in the early process of that when, and I'm trying to think now as I'm talking to you, Salida, what made me go from I can't do this on Fridays to like the friendship needs to break up?
Yeah. And you know, I don't particularly remember Fridays like in any like notable moments around Fridays in particular. I just remember that the communication became more distant. And, you know, phone calls, because I was not a phone call initiator, but you might initiate a phone call to me, and those became less and less. And I also remember talking to our other mutual friend, Maya, and realizing that the two of you had been connecting or talking or chatting way more than you and I had. And I was like, what is going on? Because I had maintained my connection with Maya. That was fine. It was consistent. But my connection with you was growing more and more and more like distant. And for me, this is devastating because, again, my friend circle is very small and very intense. So to lose one is like, you know, you're losing a part of yourself.
Yeah.
And I just remember pursuing you a little bit and like coming to your place. And I'm like, what is going on? What is it? Because I could feel it's like the breakup happened, without any real clear communication. You know, it was just, I was meant to experience it while you distanced yourself. And there was just one moment where I came to the house where you were staying, because I think I had to drop off a table or pick up something. I was dropping off something, some excuse to be there. And I was like, what is it? And I don't exactly remember your exact words, but it was just something like, I need space.
Yeah.
You know, I can't do this anymore. And I was just like, we're not going to hang out. We're not going to talk. We're not going to. And you were like, no. And I was like, okay. And walked away, you know, moved away, really put all my eggs in a basket.
Yeah.
With Maya, our other friend, and just hung on to that to dear life, because now, like, what I had known to be the friendship circle that we had was gone.
Yeah.
I think another aspect of that was what was happening with us with the church. Our relationship with the church that we were attached to was changing for each of us in a different way.
Yeah.
And that played a part. I'll let you communicate how large of a part it played, but I know it did play a part in our ability to connect, because one of the things that was like the medium that we used to connect, our attachment to it was changing.
Right.
And when that shifted, it absolutely shifted us as well.
Yeah. Yo, I feel like a little teary talking to you about this.
It was a rough time.
I didn't expect to feel teary talking about it, but I think I feel teary in part because I just feel like it was such a shakeup for all of us in different ways at the time. And probably, like, looking back on it, was a time that it would have been nice for us to have had each other. But because of the way all of the shakeup went down, and all I can think to chalk it up to is just my own emotional immaturity at the moment, not knowing how to say, I want to kick it with you, but I'm trying to find myself. And I've had you in my life since I was 18. And, like, I feel like I'm about to figure out maybe the kind of woman I am or who I want to be. And I want to have the space to figure that out while we still kick it. And can we do that? And what would that look like? Like, I think that's, like, if we were having that moment today, right? I feel like that's how I would have had that conversation.
Yeah.
But, like, 24-year-old me was just like, I got to get out. And I don't know. I just know
this.
I can't be here. It was like, I didn't have a gray. I just had, it's all, it's nothing.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I can't be the all that I think you would want from me or you would expect of me. So instead of trying to figure out what the middle could be that would be workable for both of us, it's going to be nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I came to that while I was having the rumblings that I was going to have to leave our church. Mm. But I don't think I knew that then when you and I had that conversation. Yeah. And I think I was honestly still trying to figure out what to do about our friendship. And it was almost like if I could think back to myself now, it's almost like I think I felt like I need to say something. But I can only imagine it. Like, I just was like, what is the language of how you say this? And I could not figure that out. And so I just got distant.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing about our friendship is you've always been very upfront. You've always been a very direct and clear communicator, you know? And so when you, like, called me on it, like, what you doing, dog? Like, why? Like, you don't be around. Like, not just physically, but emotionally, you don't be around. So what's up with you? And, like, when you called me out like that, then it sort of pushed me to have to say, and because I didn't have any gray elements in that, all I could think was, like, I need some space, but I don't know how long.
Yeah.
And I don't know what space looks like. So I'm just thinking it must look like we don't talk and it must look like we don't kick it.
Yeah.
But I do remember saying some things like, but I still love you though. And I'm always gonna, and I could see on your face, you were like, boo.
I was done.
Like,
I was done.
I don't, what the hell is she talking about?
And I also knew that I was still heavily involved, heavily connected, heavily committed to that ministry in that church. And I knew that you had distanced yourself from that as well. So one of the natural things I used for us to hang out was just being in proximity in that space. I knew that had already, that was gone. So if there's no natural you know, easy way of being in the same space, and there's not going to be any intentional way of being in the same space, then, you know, it was over.
Yeah.
It was over. And that was 24.
Yo. Yeah.
That was 2004.
Woo, y'all. This is probably one of the most emotional episodes I've ever recorded. So thankful for my friend Salida agreeing to come on and discuss with me how we navigated friendship post-college and what led to our friendship breakup in our 20s. In next week's episode, Salida and I discuss what happened in our lives during the time of our friendship breakup and what caused us to reconnect after so many years. You can follow Salida at 11 Locks on Instagram. That's at 11 Locks on Instagram. And you can follow her podcast and poetry at I'm Simply Artistic on Instagram. To learn more about her work, visit imsimplyartistic.com. Normally at the end of these episodes, I do a segment called Give Her a Crown. But because of the subject of this episode, I want to do a different closing segment called Ask Yourself This. In your closest friendships, is there something that isn't working for you that you need to be honest about? Have you felt distance from a friend? And if so, what is causing you to feel distant? Does one of your friendships require a breakup? And if so, how can you handle the breakup with care, honesty, and gentleness towards the other person and yourself? Tune in next week to hear how Salida and I reconnect, heal, and find a way forward to healthier friendship. Thanks for listening. Her with Amina Brown is produced by Matt Owen for Soul Graffiti Productions as a part of the Seneca Women Podcast Network in partnership with iHeartRadio. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.